Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Tuesday, December 18th, 2012. That's when Yvonne and I are recording it again a little later than we usually do. And this is Curmudgeon's Corner, Yvonne, me, here. We'll get started. We have a couple things. There's the fiscal cliff, Google Maps, Apple, some other stuff. But obviously, there's one issue that's absolutely dominated the last couple of days here. And so, of course, we'll talk about it. And that's the school shooting in Connecticut and all the possible things that come out of that. So I guess the summary... you got to be blind if you don't know and haven't been paying attention, but somebody stole his mother's gun, shot her in the face.
Guns, plural.
And then after killing her, went to an elementary school, went into a couple classrooms, killed a total of 20 children, and I believe it was 6 additional adults. And so the total death, and then himself, so the total death toll was 28. 20 children, 6 adults at the school, his mother and himself, was the grand total in the end. The children involved were all age 6 and 7, all in first grade. And I guess that's about it for the high-level summary. I mean, there have been all kinds of details posted. I'm sure you're all familiar with them. So I'll start with saying I posted something on Saturday that got it's actually like some of the highest level of response I've gotten for anything other than a couple of my election posts and, you know, some cute pictures of my family. Which was context for on Sandy Hook, and the gist of this, I'll just give the high level points. Please read the post. It's context on Sandy Hook. I posted it on Saturday, December 15th. But basically, first of all, I don't know anybody who's talked about this who hasn't been fairly substantially, like, emotionally invested in the whole thing. And, you know, because one of the things is, you know, a few months ago we talked about the movie theater shooting, and somehow this has a higher impact. And, you know, and to me, it gets summed up this way, you know. With the movie theater shooting, you know, you think about, what if that was me? But on this case, at least if you're a parent, you think about, what if it was my kids?
You know, I got to tell you something. I have been avoiding the story, okay?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, after the first, I paid attention.
Probably very consciously, because I just...
I've had to turn it off several times. I didn't want to deal with it. Like, in the first day, like, I actually wasn't paying very much attention. And then I happened to turn off something else, and President Obama's speech on it was on. And then I paid close attention for maybe the next hour, and then I just couldn't handle it, and I turned everything off, and I ignored it for a while. And then, you know, and then a few hours later, I read a couple things, and then, you know, the next morning, I read a couple things, and, you know, it's still, even today, you know, if I click on the wrong things on Twitter and read the wrong couple of articles, like, within a few minutes, I'm like tearing up and I'm like, oh my God, and I'm getting all emotional about it. And I mean, and it is deeply affecting if you start think, because you can't help but thinking about, well, what if this was my family? What would, you know, be going on? And that's just the nature of it. I don't know. I think part of what I said in the thing I posted Saturday was, look, I broke down in tears several times about this because I was watching too much of it and thinking about it too much.
Purposely avoiding it because precisely that.
And what I was going to say though is, what, but when you start thinking about, you know, everybody starts saying, oh, we got to do something, we got to do something, we got to do something. But if you're going to be rational about that kind of stuff, you got to step back, you got to put a little distance behind it. Now, I realize...
Nobody's been rational about this.
This is part of what I'm getting at. Look, there are two conflicting factors here. One, if you want good public policy out of it, you have to step back and get it a little distance and not look at it emotionally. But on the other hand... to get anything done, you have to harness that emotion.
When what I see is a moron like Bill Bennett today advocating that a whole bunch of people saying, oh yeah, we need is more guns in the schools. Everybody should have had a gun, and then nothing would have happened. I'm like, oh really? So we would have turned the fucking school into a shooting gallery? Couple of guys with guns, then the other guy with the automatic weapon. Oh yeah, this brilliant.
So,
genius.
So before we get into those policy things, let me summarize a couple of the points from my thing. One, and I think this is the most important aspect of anything I said, which is, yes, there's a huge emotional impact when you have a big event like this with a lot of people killed at the same time, but fundamentally, 28 people killed together is not worse than 28 people killed separately. You see it more, it's more shocking, it has more impact, but in the end, it's 28 people dead either way. And as horrible as this was today, you got to look at it in a greater context, which is in the United States alone, and I looked up all these stats and there are links in the article, 15,000 people are killed violently in the United States every year. 15,000 and 700. Wait, 700 of those are children under the age of 14.
Sam, so that's 15,000 out of 300 million people, right? Yeah. I come from an island of 4 million people that 1,000 people are murdered every year. Okay, all right,
yeah,
1,000. Okay, every year. This year they're running close to 1,000 again. I mean, I saw people shot at in front of me. I mean, I had a guy put a gun to my face. I mean, unfortunately, this kind of violence is something that we have, not just here, but in a lot of places every day. And my
point here is that, you know, okay, 28 people were killed on Friday in this one incident. You know, there have been more than that many killed since then in the 5 days or three days or however long it's been since it happened. And there have even been, you know,
it happened in a school. It happened in an environment where an elementary school is one of the environments where we hold, like, as one of the safest places that we can have our children.
A whole bunch of these happen in people's homes.
I know what you mean.
But my whole point,
safer than their homes.
No. My whole point here, though, you're absolutely right. That's another reason why it has the emotional impact. But the whole thing is, like, it has a huge emotional impact because it's multiple people, because it was a school, because it was children. But in the end, if you start trying to address these problems by, you know, oh, we have to make our schools safer, or, oh, we have to concentrate on the cases where multiple people are killed, you're actually doing a disservice, because what you really want to do is bring down the overall rate. The fact that there are these outliers, you know, as emotionally affecting as they are, you have to, like, if you're going to, quote, do something about it, if you concentrate on these outlier cases instead of concentrating on what's much more common, which is one person killing another person, or one person killing, and most of the time killing people they know and family, then you're not using your resources appropriately. So you have to put it in the context. Yes, I mean, I'd love to see less multiple killings, but the multiple killings are, you know, 1 in 2,000, again, I looked up the stats, 1 in 2,000 homicide incidents involve 5 or more victims. And 95% of homicides have only a single victim. So if you're worried about, like, you know, addressing violence in society, it's not those one in 2,000 you want to concentrate your thoughts on. But let me get to some of the other points here that I made, because I think some of these are important too, and I apologize to those of you who already read my post. The other is putting it in the historical context. And I looked at the U.S. violent death rate over the last century. It is better today than it has been since in almost 50 years.
Oh, yeah,
since absolutely. The mid-1960s was the last time it was better than today. And so, you know, yes, it's more dramatic because you hear about it more and it's more immediate and you see it on your TV. And within minutes of it happening, you've got like, you've got live TV and you've got Twitter and you've got Facebook and you've got pictures of the victims and you've got this and you've got that. And so it's more immediate. It's more in your face. But the reality is we're safer now than we've been in longer than you or I, Yvonne, have been alive.
Oh, I know. You know, I'm aware of that.
I make the point too, by the way.
I have been one not to have an knee-jerk reaction to the event. I mean, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I see all these people having this discussion about gun control, no gun control, this and that and whatever. While I do agree on one thing, okay, look, I see no need in a household to have the kind of semi-automatic weapon that this lady had.
So let me finish up and we'll talk
sorry,
about that.
I'm sorry, but, you know, a semi-automatic M16.
She was stocking up to protect against the collapse of society.
Exactly. Okay, over in, near Greenwich, Connecticut, you know, and I'm looking at, she got $300,000 worth of alimony a year. I'm sure that, you know, she was really in a very violent environment, okay?
Anyway.
I don't get that. I mean, that's the one thing. It's just... Look, the other part of this whole thing, which is something that you haven't touched on, is, look, the mental illness aspect of this kid. Okay,
I've got that on my list. Give me a couple more seconds.
And the fact that, look, I happen to have an autistic niece. Okay, all right, who is about the same age. Okay, now her autism is probably far more severe than this kid's Asperger's is. Mm. Okay, but let me tell you something. The last thing that I would have in a household, I've known the fits and the violent fits that my niece has had. I think it's insane to have an unlocked weapon anywhere near somebody that is suffering from that. Okay, I know this from experience because she's done things with things. I mean, everything in that house has to be locked down. You can't have anything really accessible that she may be able to inflict harm on anybody. Okay, I mean, it's not really an easy thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that if she was dealing with that, and I mean, either the guns were unlocked or gave him she had it in a way that he could get access to them.
Yeah, and we don't know those details yet.
Which I don't know, but I mean, seemed incredibly irresponsible to me. It really, I was like very jarred by it, okay? Because I've been dealing with this, you know, with my family for a very long time.
Well, so, you know, and the reports that she regularly took him out shooting and things like that as well.
Yeah, which I'm like, God, for God's sakes, yeah, that's the last thing I'm doing with my freaking niece. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
So, I mentioned that we're the best off that we've been in 50 years, but it's also important to note that, you know, our rate is, the U.S. is about 6 per 100,000 per year, violent death. And that's still horrible compared to a lot of comparable countries.
Big time. Yeah.
And the examples I gave in here are 1.9 for Germany, France, and Canada, 1.3 for the UK, less than 1 for Japan. So we're 6 times worse than Japan.
And that's what drives me crazy about the whole thing. Like, you know, we say, oh, guns make you safer. Guns make you safer. I'm sorry, but we have a bazillion more guns than these people, and I truly believe that that's the reason why we have this much, you know, a murder rate that is so much higher than these countries.
Well, and you know, and as I continued to go through here, the next thing is to look at, well, okay, you know, what is the division here? And the answer is about 2/3 of homicides in the United States are by gun, one sort of a gun or another. And
let's face it, we'll put it to you this way. You try to, like, hit somebody to death or stab somebody to death, it's a lot more difficult than taking a gun and pumping them full of bullets.
They're a very effective weapon.
Yes, they work very well.
And they're, you know, they're smaller and easier to conceal than running around with a sword or something.
Yes. that'll be the new criminal wave now. We'll put in gun control.
It is interesting, and I note this in my post as well, the one visible trend in weaponry used for homicide since 1976 is a reduction, both in absolute and percentage terms, of the number of homicides committed by knife.
Because there's so many guns available, it's so much easier.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But, you know, and look, people do make points, about... So, anyway, you know, what this shows, like, with two-thirds, you know, doing something about guns, quote-unquote, and we'll undoubtedly talk more about this in a second in terms of what something might be, addressing guns does, and gun death, sounds like a reasonable place to start if it's two-thirds, you know, because what happens, you know, people say two things all the time. One, if guns weren't easily available, the murders may still happen, and because people would just use other weapons. And they also say, even if you had lots of restrictions on guns, even if they were illegal, anybody who really wanted one could still want one, still get one. And I will grant both of those. You know, some of the murders would still happen. People would use a different weapon. And yes, anybody who wants a gun could still get a gun, just like anyone who wants illegal drugs can get illegal drugs today. You know, it places an obstacle, but if you really want it, you get it. But even granting that both of those are true, because the percentage of these deaths that are by gun is so high, even if only a small percentage, and I actually think it would be a fairly large percentage, but even if only a small percentage ended up not killing the person because they couldn't get access to the gun, it would make a significant difference. You know, a lot of those folks who might, you know, shoot the person might stab them instead and the person might live, you know,
yep.
or they might, you know, not end up bothering at all just because it wasn't easy. I don't know. But, like, again, it's a large percentage. I suspect that you'd actually have a significant chunk of those disappear. And I think I've been reading over the last few days there, you know, Australia did a very significant increase in its gun laws in response to a mass murder, I don't know, a decade ago. I forget the year. And there has been a dramatic effect there. And I suspect we would see something similar here.
Well, think about it. Look. Very simple thing. Think about it. You're going to go and, like, there's a person there's standing 10 feet away from you. You fire three bullets. Or you have to take a knife and get up close to this person and stab them to death. I'm sorry, but the difference is quite clear. I mean, that is so much of a hand-to-hand personal thing that just, you know, it's just the gun makes it like a, seems like a fucking video game. Let's face it. I mean, we have so many that that's all they do.
Yeah, damn. Let's not demonize the video games. That's a whole other issue. But yeah, I get your point.
Yeah.
And you know, and you mentioned mental health, and I also mentioned that there's been a lot of arguments that increased mental health support could also make a really big difference. And that's not to say there's been a lot of criticism in the last couple of days that anybody who mentions mental health issues is somehow stigmatizing the mentally ill and saying that the mentally ill are all violent and blah, blah, blah. That's bullshit. Okay. You know, we all recognize that there's a huge variety of mental illness and some are dangerous and some are not and blah, blah, blah. But frankly, it's not even quote unquote mental illness. It's a broader based thing about having, you know, the right support networks in place so that people who are in, you know, the types of situations that could escalate have ways to get out of them. Mm-hmm. It's helping people, you know, to understand how to react in more constructive ways than violence. I don't know. That's sort of wishy-washy, but I mean, God damn it. Those things do make a difference. And yes, it also includes the folks who are really potentially dangerous, getting them the help they need, which in some cases may be inpatient. In some cases, it may just be like, give them money so they can take their damn meds.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend of my wife's who, I think actually sometimes listens to this show, so apologies if I say anything I shouldn't, but who has some issues and who, when they're fully on their meds, are absolutely fine, but have occasionally been under financial constraints and simply haven't been able to afford their meds. And then it becomes a bad situation. And it's like those kinds of things. And I'm not saying that this person is violent or anything like that. I'm just saying these kinds of situations can deteriorate, and a little bit of support can potentially help those. So yeah, mental health is a big part of this, but you know, there are a lot of people of the anti-gun control lobby as well who are saying, oh, don't do gun control, do mental health stuff. No, it's not an either or. It's a fucking both, probably.
Right.
And like, you know, and I had, I'll do the feedback I got real quick on this. By the way, thanks for everybody. I've got a bunch of likes, a bunch of positive comments on the post I made Saturday. So thank you to everybody who did that. The one comment I got was from Mark, a regular listener of ours. Hey, Sam, just read your post about the Sandy Hook shooting and greatly appreciate your thoughts. I do have a couple questions for you that you can either answer here or save for the next Curmudgeon's Corner. I chose to save them. What are your personal preference on, it says high rights, but I presume he meant gun rights. You strike me as more of a libertarian than myself. Second, from what is currently reported, what gun control laws could have changed the outcome? It seems to me from what is reported, the shooter first tried to acquire a rifle and was turned away. He then killed someone, his mother, took her gun, and started the rampage. There is no gun control law that I'm aware of that could have prevented this. Example, if I went nuts, broke into a neighbor's house, a registered gun owner, killed him, drove to the nearest mall, etc., no law on the books from a gun control standpoint could stop me. The same could be said for a knife or a car setting fire to something. In a free society, a lot of law enforcement is reactionary. Thoughts?
I disagree with that a little bit, because one of the things that people have been like talking about is that people should be forced, if you have a gun, to make sure that you actually either have trigger locks on them or you have them secured in a place where, you know, with a combination that it makes it difficult to access the weapon. And that's one problem that you have, because
but how the hell do you
one of the biggest
that?
Problems that I've seen with guns out there, and I'll tell you from personal example. My father and my brother both owned guns like 20 years ago. Both the damn guns got stolen. Mm. My father actually had two freaking guns stolen. They were not placed in a place that should have been a place in order to secure a weapon. They were not really locked. Okay, my brother's gun that got stolen, unfortunately, got used in a robbery and a murder. Okay,
right.
And all of a sudden, the police came knocking at his door, and that's when he realized that the gun that he had supposedly stashed away in his closet wasn't there. And it had been because of a robbery. There had been a break. Apparently, somebody came into the house, either workers or something, broke in. They thought it was a minor theft. Nothing got stolen. But he didn't use the gun that often, and he forgot about it. And my problem is that, you wind up with a lot of guns out there that are out there because people don't properly lock and secure them. Because somebody breaks into a house and goes and steals something from a car or something, it is just one of the most attractive things to do. And a lot of people love to leave their damn guns in cars or in unlocked places.
Well, because of course, like if somebody attacks you and it's locked up, how are you going to use it to defend yourself?
Yeah, and the freaking problem is that, you know, people talk about using a freaking gun to defend themselves, and I'm like, really? You're going to have somebody in front of you and you know, you're going to have the wherewithal to actually think that straight, that you're going to be able to pull out a gun and fucking pull the trigger on that person. Okay? You know, I remember when I had a gun put to my face, I was so fucking nervous. Okay? All right? And shaking. That's the last thing that would have crossed through my brain if I had a gun somewhere stashed in the car. I could have not thought that straight. I mean, I just couldn't. You're not prepared for that situation where somebody walks up to you and all of a sudden just comes up to you. You're not thinking like you're thinking with a clear head and all of a sudden, oh yeah, I'll just pull the gun and just shoot him. I mean, what if, like, you say you're a teacher? What if it's in a purse? So you got it in a purse in the classroom, and you're walking around. You're gonna run back to the frickin' purse and grab it?
Well, not to mention if you're already dead. Not to mention if it's in your freaking purse, what's to stop one of your kids from getting
it
out and playing with it, wiping
it,
thinking it's a joke, or using it?
Or using it. Okay.
And
I mean, so what? You're supposed to walk around with a fucking gun strapped to your body?
And
I mean, as a teacher, I mean,
and there are people who advocate that, but the stats that I've read, and there have been tons of places like pointing these things out over the last couple days, but if you have a gun in the house, the risk of someone in your home being murdered increased by 41%.
What a shock!
And for women, that rises 272%. It's like. Amazingly, and in you know, in all, and that's according to Amnesty International, I guess.
It makes sense. It makes sense. Unfortunately,
and you've made
the weapon available for your demise.
And
really handy.
Fundamentally, the rate, and I know people will talk about gun safety and being very careful with them and being a responsible gun owner and blah blah blah. But the reality is, yes, there are people out there who are that, but most people aren't.
They're fucking careless.
And the rate of people killed accidentally by their own handgun or the handgun of a family member is higher than the rate of people successfully defending themselves when something happens. I'm sounding like, you know, completely on the gun control side of things. I do want to present the other side, which is I want to be very, very careful about overreach. Because you mentioned, for instance, hey, the law should require you to have certain restrictions and be safe about where you put it. But how the hell do you enforce that? How do you enforce that without having a really onerous mechanism, you know, that violates everybody's freedoms? Now, and
computer chips, RFID, I don't know, the fact that if you don't have the gun locked in a certain way, you need to, you know, it'll wind up. Because, unfortunately, I mean, it's one of those things where... I know that it may be intrusive, and I don't like intrusion. I know, you know, I agree, but there's got to be some way that people know if you are a registered gun owner and you don't have your gun secure and you don't have your gun properly secured, okay, and you keep that not properly secured for an extended period of time. Well, then somebody's got to be able to take action on that fact, because unfortunately, that's how a lot of guns wind up in the wrong hands.
So let me actually step back just a second and actually answer Mark's question, because I let you go first. But his first thing was just, what are my own personal thoughts on gun rights? And he's right, I do have a more generally libertarian position. I generally don't like government involved in places where they don't like to be involved. But honestly, in the case of guns, I find that balanced by my inability to I can't justify, I have to balance against the overall public safety. There's the whole thing of your rights end when mine start.
Right.
And to me, this is, you're asking for permission to hold and carry something that is inherently, as far as I can see, the risks far outweigh the benefits. I look at, and I'm not a religious zealot about the Constitution or anything. I'm not I think a lot of very good principles are included in many parts of the Constitution. My favorite amendment is probably the first. So I'm not going to be like, oh, Second Amendment. You know, if the Second Amendment is wrong, we can fucking change it. But fundamentally, so I think it's, I personally don't buy any of the arguments for gun ownership. I don't buy the self-defense. I think that has been statistically proven over and over and over again.
It's bullshit.
The only possible case where it is helpful is if you're talking super, super highly trained individuals. And even then, it's unclear. If they're super, super highly trained, like ex-military or whatever, they're also likely to, accidentally go off sometime when they're not supposed to either by react. You know, somebody breaks into their house and they immediately react and shoot them. Oh, turns out, you know, it was my friend popping Oops. Over for an unexpected visit.
Right.
You know? I don't buy self-defense. I don't buy hunting because, frankly, I don't get the whole point of hunting.
I'll give in on the hunting. I get that. okay. I don't do it, but I can understand
the thrill of it, but in the end, I'm like, anybody who gets joy out of killing things, I think they're wrong. Listen,
it's not a thing out of killing things in a kitchen. Let's face it, I eat beef. Okay.
Yes. I understand that, and I'm a hypocrite because I'm not a vegetarian. But at the same time, I think there's a difference between a death that is, you know, you're under somewhat controlled circumstances that you're going to make use of the results of, and blah blah blah.
To feed, to eat. Okay.
I'm hoping the guy at the slaughterhouse who kills the animal that ends up in my hamburger isn't every time he clicks the lever to kill an animal isn't going, oh yeah.
I highly doubt that.
You know, and that's the difference to me.
I'm pretty sure he's not. I'm pretty sure he's
Now the recreational, hey, target shooting, whatever. You know, I can see that. You know, my wife is ex-military, and every once in a while she's like, I would like to go to a shooting range. I think that would be fun to do. And I'm like, I'm not uncomfortable with it.
I've done target shooting with rifles and guns and stuff, and I've enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, I like target shooting, but frankly,
you can accomplish.
I mean, honestly, I would like that the fucking guns are like locked up in the fucking target range. Yeah, okay, exactly. All right, under
there
secure.
There you go. You don't have to have one in your house, like a vault, and they don't just walk out of there. Yeah, I mean, exactly. You could take care of that way if you wanted. And then the final argument that people sometimes use, and we've talked about this on this show before, is that guns are sort of the ultimate defense against your government being tyrannical. And the thing I've always said is, you know, and I've hyperbolically said, I agree, that's the only argument I agree with on gun control, and frankly, I think you should have fighter jets and nukes as well. And of course I'm being hyperbolic there because look, the reality of the situation is, let's say, you know, you're not going to rise up against the U.S. government with your fucking little handgun.
Right. You're gonna get crushed.
In the worst case scenario, you turn into David Koresh or something.
Right.
You know, and you're not going to do your rebellion there. That's what I'm saying, the most powerful military in the world, and what?
You're going to go with a couple of handguns and a machine gun to do what?
Yeah, and look, in the actual situation where the US government becomes overtly tyrannical and needs to be overthrown, there will be a whole process that leads up to it. You'd have rebels taking over military bases, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
You don't need a whole bunch of people sitting on arsenals in their goddamn houses. That's not the way you're going to solve that situation, if it ever happens. And frankly, if you're worried about that happening right now, you're halfway to the loony bin already. You know, and you are the last person I want with a gun. You know, so I don't buy any of those arguments. And so fundamentally, in the end, I think that at the very least, like, frankly, I would not shed a single tear if the United States banned private ownership of guns entirely. But I know that's not realistic at all, given the culture in this country. But I think that what is eminently reasonable is that you have very strong regulations on them, probably stronger than we have today. And certainly, I've seen a lot of people make comparisons in the last couple of days about, and yes, Yvonne, we'll take a break soon. He's IMing me. make the comparison with cars. I mean, for a car, you have to take a written test. You have to take a practical test. You have to get the car registered. You have to get insurance. You have to have proof of insurance on it. If the car ever changes owners, you have to redo a whole bunch of paperwork.
You know what would make it like almost like
could
so many
at
people
least
wouldn't
do
have
the
guns
same
anymore.
Thing with
Imagine
guns?
If they had to buy liability insurance on the gun.
Exactly.
Forced.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. And the people, you know, including like if somebody steals the damn gun from you and then goes and shoots them, you have some liability for that.
Right.
You know, and I think that kind of stuff is reasonable. And those kinds of regulations, I think, you know, are more than reasonable, and I think it's kind of crazy that we don't have them. I mean, people make the comparison to cars all the time too. I could go out today and probably kill 30 people with no effort whatsoever with my car. I mean, really, I just, you know, drive my car.
I get it. Drive into a crowd.
I don't know.
I mean, I think after you hit a couple, I think that somebody would chase you down and crash you off the road.
Well,
but
all you have to do is find a crowd, so you get them all at once.
Okay.
You know, every once in a while, you get these stories of this happening by accident, where the 87-year-old man driving like gets his foot stuck.
Well, but not 30 people. I mean, you'll get a few, but not 30. I got your point.
You just have to pick your moment properly.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, just continuously just fucking like just driving and mowing
them
over.
The difference is the guy with his foot stuck is trying not to do it. If you were intentionally going out to see how many people could I kill with my car, you know, you could do 30.
Maybe.
I'm not advocating, just to be clear, I am not advocating this. And B, I have no plan to do this. Okay? Please, nobody go do this. Please.
No, do not do this.
People make the arguments on both sides of these that, you know, like, well, why do we need all these restrictions on guns? After all, anyone can have a car. And, well, the answer is, well, there's more restrictions on cars, actually, you know, in many cases. You're right, Yvonne. We've been going a long time. Let's take a break, and I'll answer the second half of the question after the break.
The second half. Fuck.
Are there any?
Yes, I know. We only answered the first half.
Yes. Okay. We'll be back after this.
This is a break. Oh yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you. I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Okay, we're back. So the second half of the question, for anybody who forgot, is, are there any regulations that could have stopped this particular incident? And I think the answer is, maybe not.
That was my answer that I said yes. Because I think that the fact that the person did not have their guns properly secured was one of the biggest factors contributing to this. Because it seems extremely likely that they did not.
Yeah, maybe. But again, I see there are a lot of gun regulations.
This child had easy access to go and get these guns.
Well, he wasn't quite a child. He was like 20.
Well, 20. Okay. You know, yeah.
I know.
He's not a child, but you know.
But look, I still have problems with that particular regulation because I really worry about how you would enforce that in any sort of meaningful way. But there are
states that mandate trigger locks and other things and whatever. And if you make it that, you know.
And it's true that even laws that aren't strictly easily enforceable still have effects on people's behavior.
Yes.
It may be that there's only a 1 in 1,000s chance that I'm going to get a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. But I wear my seatbelt anyway. You know?
Right.
And it's not necessarily just because of the law, but a lot of people, it is. You know?
And if you go when you purchase a weapon, they extract to you, well, you need to have this, and you need to have this strong box, and you need to have it secured this way, you need to this and so forth. And, you know, you probably will wind up doing it.
Yeah. No, I agree. But look, here's the thing. I think the answer is, Yvonne argues that, yes, there are laws that could have stopped this scenario. I'm thinking maybe not, because even if you have all these laws, you know, this woman might not have locked her thing, or maybe before he shot her, he forced her some other way to open it for him. You never know. Like, the bottom line is anybody who's really determined, the law won't matter. But this comes back to my point at the beginning of the show and in my post on Saturday, which is if you focus on any particular incident, especially a particularly visible incident like this, in terms of trying to construct your laws, you're aiming wrong, to use a gun metaphor. You know, what you want to do is what will bring the overall numbers down. You may not be able to stop the maniac going into the theater or the elementary school, but if you stop the guy who in a fit of anger goes out and does something on the spur of the moment, you've made a big jump.
Right.
You've made a big effect on this. You know, if you stop the kid who decides it would be fun to like play around with his gun and shoots his brother by mistake, you've made a big difference.
Right.
You know, if like Yvonne said before, if you transmogrify a whole bunch of the violent incidents with guns because the gun was easily available into just people punching or people, you know, even knives, a lot less people would die. I mean, we talked earlier, Trayvon Martin, that case in Florida from earlier in the year. You know,
what if it was just a fist fight?
If it was a fist fight, we never would have heard of it.
Yep.
You know, if it was knives, we never would have heard of it. You know, because most likely everybody would have survived, you know, and you know, people also bring up the comparison to the incident in China just at the same time, practically, as this incident in Connecticut, where some crazy guy went into an elementary school in China with a knife. And he injured some 20 or so people, but they all went home.
There you go.
You know?
There you go.
And so, I you know, my whole thing on the regulation, though, I think I think some reasonable gun regulation that is probably a hell of a lot stronger than what we have today is probably reasonable. But, and this is a big caveat, I very much worry about anything that might be done by, you know, because Congress doesn't have a good record on this kind of thing. The government doesn't have a good record on this kind of thing in terms of doing something
we're gauging how good they would do. We're just saying whether if something actually correct happened that was passed.
Well, no, but I think
it would work. Well, the answer is a probable yes, but you know, I'm not that optimistic. Well, I don't think anything's going to happen out of this whole thing.
Yeah, probably not. And we'll talk about that in a second. But here's the problem. When things do happen, when you do get amazing pressure, we must do something, and everybody gets all worked up, and they get excited, and they push something through, more times than not, what gets pushed through is at best ineffective and at worst counterproductive. Every once in a while, we get lucky, and it works. But I really think of that as getting lucky. I mean, and the prime example is all this 9/11 crap. The Patriot Act. Everything that TSA has done. I think all of this stuff was a massive, massive overreaction to 9/11, which, again, horrible event. Many people died. It was awful. I don't deny that in the slightest. But in the end, you know, we have given up so much in order to do this, to make us feel better about being secure. And many studies have shown we actually haven't gotten any more secure at all. You know, the gains are negligible, if any, in terms of actual security. But at the same time, we've, you know, the whole situation at airports is a mess. The whole thing with surveillance and you know, being able to jail people without charges and blah, 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 blah.
Well, I mean, not I to mention two wars. We should have been able to jail you without charges. Yeah. I mean, that's just my perspective.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's just, for me, a prime example of an overreaction. So I would want, you know, anything that does get proposed and go through, I would be very cautious. I agree, you know, like I said, I agree. We probably should have regulations that are stronger than what we have today. But I don't have a really good feeling about the government and the Congress being able to implement that in a way that's actually effective and actually makes like I could see them like you know, because this was a mass shooting, we're going to go after assault weapon. I mean, and there's some evidence, by the way, that the assault weapon ban that was in effect for a number of years did cause a potentially small reduction in the number of mass shootings, although that number is so small, there's not enough what they call power for it to be statistically significant. But there's some evidence that there might have been an effect. It might have been an improvement. But even if you did, if you aim at these outlier cases that are just a tiny fraction of the overall situation, you're not hitting the right target, and it's not making that big of an impact overall. And so, I would like if Congress actually was able to put something together that made sense and was careful to protect the rights of Americans that, you know, were law abiding and willing to, you know, be properly safe with their weapon and blah, 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 blah. But in the end, I think the country would be a better place with less guns. And so I don't mind the idea of regulation, but I have so little confidence in Congress to be able to carry it out in a way that is actually effective and doesn't impose restrictions that are so onerous on people that it causes costs of its own. Like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I look at this stuff and I'm like, yeah, something must be done. But at the same time, it's like, let's make sure it's the right something, and let's make sure we're looking at the right problem and not just having a knee-jerk reaction to a very emotional event.
Okay. Well, all right. So we talked about the event. We talked about a lot of gun control. We talked about...
Shall we take a break and move on to something completely different?
Mental illness, everything. I don't know. Yeah, we should take a break and probably talk about something else.
Something else. Okay, guys. And I want to say one more thing. When I was thinking about doing this show, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to get through this segment without like crying and breaking down. And somehow I managed it. And I think I managed it by like, we really quickly went over the situation at the beginning and didn't talk details.
Right.
Because if I started talking details, I'd be sobbing here in like a minute. Yeah. So let's not do that. Let's take a break and we'll be back. And Fiscal Cliff. How about Fiscal Cliff?
Fiscal Cliff.
Fiscal
something.
Cliff.
Anything. Gotta know.
We got Google Maps too. And we'll be back after this. Okay, here we are. So, you want to do smartphone stuff first or fiscal cliff economy stuff?
No, I mean, okay, we need to do a coin flip here. We could do one more thing.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Because we're going to go into like, because it's past my bedtime.
Vaughn, so, it's so late.
So, one more thing. Which one is it?
Let's do Fiscal Cliff, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because it's timely right now, and the map stuff will still be true a month from now.
Correct. All right.
And I should give you fair warning of this as well.
Yeah.
We've got only 2 weekends left in the year.
Yeah.
So we need to schedule our retrospective of our predictions from last year and our new prediction show.
Oh boy, yes. We need to go over the predictions. So, yes, we do.
Yeah, and so we can do We can do retrospective next week and predictions on the 30th, or we could do one more regular show and then those 2 weeks, and the predictions would be the first week of the new year instead of the last week of the old year. What do you think? What do you think?
I'm going to say we'll do it because I'm going to be off like the following week, so I can do the proper analysis of the retrospective. So it should be like the following week, and then we'll do the predictions in the new year.
Okay, so next week will be a look, guys, we're planning the show on the air. I'm sure that's interesting to you. But regular show next week, and then the show we record on, and then the next show after that, well, yeah, we'll figure it out. Next show after that will be retrospective, and the show after that will be predictions, and they'll actually probably both be the first 2 weeks of next year, because we won't record till the first. So, yeah, anyway, we'll figure it out. Anyway, those are coming soon. In the meantime, Fiscal Cliff.
Fiscally clipped.
So I hear that they're getting closer to a deal, and we might. Well,
that's
not
what it seems like. But let me talk about a little bit about one effect that I figured out, and I know a lot of people don't understand what's going on, but that the fiscal cliff is having right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Apple stock. Okay. All right. Apple stock has dropped substantially over the last month and a half. Okay.
Okay.
And I started thinking about this for a second, and I realized why. Look, it's a very simple thing. I have, like, if the stock that I have in the company were in taxable accounts, okay, but most of it I have it in accounts that are retirement accounts.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
If it was in an account like that, I would have sold it right now. Because I knew that the capital gains rate would have gone from 15% to 30%, or at least a big chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a huge amount.
Even if they end up reversing some of it a few weeks later, or whatever.
Yes,
just to be safe,
it could have done that. Sold it now
and bought it back later.
I probably would have sold it just to lock in the profits. I probably wouldn't have bought it back. I mean, I think because the thing is, what's happening is there's a lot of behavior out there that is happening right now because of what people expect. People expect, I think, that if you take the gambling of what's going to happen, number one, everybody seems absolutely convinced that they're going to start taxing capital gains at the ordinary income rate. I think that seems to be a given.
But now you're mentioning Apple.
And dividends as well.
You're mentioning Apple, but the broader market is
up. But the thing is that Apple has had some outsized gains. There's a lot of people that have made a killing on Apple over the last couple of years. Okay, all right, and the gains are just outrageous. I mean, the stock got to 700%. I mean, at one point this year, the stock was up 40% for the year. The year. I mean, people were like, "Shit!" Even if you bought it in January, you made 40% for the year. You got to be thinking, dude, I gotta fucking take this money now. I can't wait till January 1st to sell this. I got to take the money right now. So I think that there's a lot of that happening out there. But of course, there's been a lot of like people paying special dividends early dividends. I mean, there's been people. So let's one thing. All the activity that's been happening right now basically points to the fact that everybody believes that the whole free ride on dividends and capital gains being taxed at this extraordinarily cheap rate is over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Everybody's convinced of that. I think that the other thing that you've seen is that even like Bonner, whatever his name is, he's buckled on the tax thing.
Isn't it Bonner?
Okay, all right.
Hey, well, whatever.
And a number of Republicans have buckled on the tax thing. Today, I was at the gym and I saw all these Tea Party ads saying, "We voted these pricks in, and they're a bunch of liars. Call them up and call them on the fact that now they're going to raise your taxes." Now, I will say that, you know, those guys are not buying effective ad time because they were running ads on one of them on MSNBC. And I mean, really? You think that that's really going to get you a lot of traction?
Well,
I really don't think so.
I'm guessing they might have been local ads that went across a whole bunch of cable channels.
But, you know, whoever did the ad buy is a moron. I mean, you could have specified, you know what? Yeah, I really don't want you to place like about 100 of these on MSNBC.
Right, right. Okay, go ahead.
So that's what I'm looking at right now. I think that they're going to cut a deal. I think.
And when we talked about this weeks ago, we all agreed that I said I hoped they went off the cliff because I think we might get better result of that. But I said I think they're going to make a deal. They're going to make a deal. We also predicted it would be at the last minute. I'm actually surprised we've had as much progress as we had this early.
I agree. But you know, let's face it, the final details haven't been hammered out.
Oh, no.
There hasn't been a vote.
There's a lot of sticking points there.
I mean, and there's a lot of things like that. And there's the question of
can Bonnier keep his caucus in control?
You know, that despite the fact that there may be a deal on the table, I'm totally expecting like the Republicans, he was like symbolically to go and vote against it or something, do some shit like that.
Oh, and there's a big move. I shouldn't say big, but there's a move among the more right wing Republicans to dump Bonnier as Speaker. The speaker vote or withhold support in any case, you know, and there are a variety of ways they could do that. If they really wanted to make a statement, I believe someone said it would only take 19 or 20, somewhere around that magnitude, of Republican representatives refusing to vote for Bonnier to deadlock the vote for speaker.
I guess they can do that, but I still don't think. I mean, what is that going to get them? I guess is the point. What the hell are they going to get from that? I mean, all they're going to do is like what seem like a whole bunch of little like you know, crying little children.
Well, the idea behind such a move would be to make it so that the Republicans can't get the Democrats wouldn't have enough votes to become the speaker either, so they'd have to do multiple ballots. And so the goal would be to make Bonnier drop out and have someone who is more conservative run for the spot that all the Republicans would vote for.
Well, I think that, look, that's all great fan and dandy. But here's the reality. You've got already polls and polling numbers indicating that 60% of Americans are supporting higher taxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, any of the speaker nonsense, if it were to happen, is after all this is over.
You do this whole thing with a fucking speaker. What the fuck is that going to get you? Well, nothing.
And also nothing, because all of that kind of stuff is after anything that's going to happen here is going to have happened.
Right.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and frankly, if the right-wing Republicans don't go for a deal, but the centrist Republicans do and the Democrats do, that's enough to win.
That's enough to win.
That's more than enough to win. You don't need to convince all the Republicans. You need to convince all the Democrats plus a few Republicans.
Right. That's it.
Or if you do something that's unacceptable for the left wing as well, something that the middle can vote for, that'll also do it. You know, so there are ways. It's looking like both sides are wanting to get this done. The Republicans, at least in the form of Bonnier, again, there's the question of is all the support there for that. But they've already agreed to a higher tax rate on those with incomes more than $1 million.
Yep.
You know,
Deals that they were tossing around was that Obama had agreed that maybe he'd raise the threshold at a higher tax rate to earnings over $400,000.
Right. Well, Obama wanted 250. Bonnier said, okay, we'll raise taxes, but only above $1 million. Now they're haggling.
Well, 400,000 is really a proper cutoff for the top 1%. It's really like, because at 300,000, 250,000, really at the top. Like closing in like 2%.
Yeah. Well, and then the Democrats and Obama have apparently agreed to this CPI chaining thing for Social Security benefits, which is, if I understand correctly, and you can correct me, Yvonne, it's the method of calculating cost of living increases, and it's a different way of estimating that tends to grow slower.
Correct.
So the end result, because it's slow, it will grow slower than the normal way people measure inflation, will mean that in an inflation-adjusted way, it's a cut in benefits.
That's correct. Yes. That is what they're trying to do, which makes sense. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I think that currently the way that has been paid out, even folks on the left have been outpacing inflation for the most part.
Even people on the left, like Paul Krugman, who I was reading today, said, I don't like the idea of the changing the chain CPI, but if it's a choice of chain CPI or raising the retirement age, I'd rather do chain CPI.
Well, I will say this. I'm for both. I am for raising the retirement age too. I mean, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, look, it's people need to fucking work longer because they're living longer. It is what it is.
Although some people have made the argument that part of the reason people are living longer is because of the Medicare benefits that kick in at 65. And so you would reduce
so that effect somewhat. So what, we should like eliminate the health benefits because we can kill them easier?
There you go. Listen, that's another way to save costs.
I'm not going to discount that too much. I have had, listen, especially with the economy turning to shit like it did over the last couple of years, I had a couple of people that were on the verge of like achieving like Medicare and Social Security who all of a sudden were in a financial bind for a while. And like maybe they were like short like a year or two from Medicare, and they had serious medical ailments that they went untreated, you know, until basically they finally got Medicare and they took care of them.
Right.
So, well,
and that's part of the worry about changing.
Don't discount
the age.
That. I mean, that has been a problem.
Yeah, and so anyway, but people think that generally that the CPI thing, while it is a reduction of benefits, is a less painful reduction of benefits than changing the retirement age. And so that's, you know, people are haggling. And that's the thing here, is that the Republicans and Democrats have found things to haggle on here. It's right. Not, you know, there are some debates where there's no common ground and there's right. No like, and nobody's compromising at all. And that's not what it seems like. We broke the log jam was the Republicans saying absolutely no increases under any circumstances. And we will fight to the death on that no matter what else is going on. That has broken.
Right.
You know? And so now that absolutist viewpoint has broken, now they can haggle.
Right.
Now they can.
I mean, it's kind of difficult to show up to a negotiating table, you know, where the other person says, all right, we're going to start a negotiation, but I'm not putting any money on the table. I'm like, well, okay, and this what is the where fuck are we talking about?
We talked about one of the questions was who blinks. It looks like Bonnier's the one who blinked.
Right.
Because they're the Republicans are the ones that had the absolute viewpoint coming into this.
Right.
That said absolutely no matter what, blah blah blah. But in the end, you know, it's like, you know, hey, there was an election, they lost. They looked into it and they basically realized the president was saying, look, I'll go over the cliff. I'm not going to sign anything that doesn't include this. And the other.
But they also knew there was no. Listen, in order to try to do it the way the Republicans were doing, the cuts that we had to do were so draconian. You could not get away with their bullshit that they were talking about. Listen, you could have eliminated almost every fucking program that was like. You know, discretionary, and you still weren't even close to what you were trying to accomplish. Okay, that's the problem. And I mean, you know, all you had to do was fucking arithmetic, and you couldn't get to what you wanted. Right. So, I mean, without doing shit like what? Let's shut down entirely. Shit. Let's shut down Customs and Border Protection. Let's shut down the Department of Energy. Let's shut down NASA. Let's shut down. I mean, and I'm talking about literally fucking shutting all of them down. Because there's no fucking other fucking way to get to the damn number, okay?
Well, and there's many folks who that is their explicit goal. I mean,
well, there's a number, but let's face it, it's not even like
20%
of Americans. The problem is that you have to go over and step on 80% of the fucking country, which would have told you, are you out of your fucking mind?
Well, and all of this is, I mean, the whole Grover Norquist. No taxes thing. This all was, I mean, and it took decades for it to play out, but it was all about this starve the beast strategy where, you know, the idea was eventually if you lower taxes and lower taxes and lower revenues and lower revenues and lower revenues, eventually you'd get to the point where the government would just be like, oh, we can't
do
this.
Yeah, but the fucking, what the fucking Republicans did over the last 20 years, especially the biggest ones that did that was fucking Ronald Reagan, fucking Mr. Bush, were cut the taxes, but not cut spending. They, yes. As a matter of fact, they increase spending a lot faster than any Democrats. So this Star of the Beast bullshit turned out to total crap because the guys that were supposedly behind it fucking didn't do it.
Well, I would say that you actually, like, they didn't do it at that point, but what you've seen in the last year is the ultimate culmination of that strategy, with the Republicans holding the economy hostage, saying, you know, we won't raise debt limit, we won't do whatever, unless you do major cuts. And I think what's happened here is we got to that final confrontation on the Star of the Beast strategy, and the end result is they lost. They lost that confrontation because in the end, the moderate Republicans are going with the Democrats and saying, yeah, you know, we need to raise some taxes.
Some. But you know what? There are going to be cuts, too.
Yeah, there will be cuts, too. Just not to the whole, like, let's cut out 50% of the government. But
no.
There will be cuts. There will
be cuts.
Now, and they may not be as substantial as the cuts that were in the sequester that, you know, would happen if no deal was reached. And we'll see. I mean, it does look like they're reaching a deal. You know, it still could fall apart. We got a couple weeks to go. There might become a point of disagreement. But I'll still go with our original prediction here. A deal will be made. A deal will be made. They will work out the details. And also, part of the deal, by the way, is looking like certain parts of this will, yes, once again, be punted further down the road, where they won't actually agree on the thing they're agreeing on. They will agree to set up a commission to study the thing.
Yeah, I love the fucking commissions. You know, that is like, you know, you want to talk about the biggest cop-out is all these fucking commissions. The commissions that, you know, the report comes out and they're like, oh, great, here, can I wipe my ass with it? Yeah, I'm not going to do anything on it. I mean, next!
These are the type of things where they say, we agree that there have to be 20% cuts somewhere.
Somewhere, right.
We don't know where.
Right.
So, and more to the point, each one of them have a definite idea of where you would cut those 20%
now,
if you had to.
Now, I will say this. There has been one case where I've seen that it's worked okay, the whole commission thing.
Yeah.
Military base closure commissions, all right? Where they wound up going and doing it. And look, maybe it's not perfect, but they do wind up closing bases. And the way that I remember that one of the things I think in the provision of the commission is, like, whatever the hell they come out with, it has to be voted straight up, yay or nay. You can't, like, cherry pick it. You know, it's, listen, this is what they recommended. This is what they're going to save. You know, you got to pick yay or nay. And, you know, multiple times they've voted it up, closed a number of bases. So,
sometimes it works.
It's worked, but it's not the...
I mean, but for the most part, it's and once you set yourself these stupid deadlines and end up with 2 weeks to do it, it's not like you can work out all the details, even if you wanted to.
Right.
But one of the things Obama is still apparently sticking with, although he's softened a little bit, was his original position was this whole debt ceiling nonsense has to just go away. We have to do a once and for all way to, like, make this not be something that can... You can't hold us hostage with this again later on down the road. And so, like, for instance, you could index the debt ceiling to some number. Index it to inflation, index it to GDP.
GDP, right.
There are a variety of things you could do to make this so it's not something that comes up every 6 months. But it looks like, at least the latest thing on the table, looks like Obama might be willing to kick it down the road just as long as it's at least a year. And whatever.
So, all right. And I think, you know, we'll get a deal, and they're getting close, and, you know, it's going to be something.
Yeah, so I guess that's a show.
That's a wrap.
Since we're gonna wait 2 weeks for our retrospective and 3 weeks for our new predictions for the year, next week we'll talk about Google Maps and whatever else comes up. I think here's my 2 second preview. I did my first week with my iPhone 5 doing exclusively the Apple Maps product. After my week was up, I've got eight navigation apps on my phone, and I'm rotating between them to evaluate them all.
Eight navigation apps? Holy shit.
Navigation apps. Some of them free, some of them paid. And I'm rotating when I'm using a different one every time I get in the car. And so I'm building my impressions of all eight of these navigation apps, and I'll be able to come back and have some reviews of these. But I will say the one thing I want to say right now is all of the scorn people put on Apple Maps, followed by all this hyperbolic jumping up and down excitement when Google Maps launched on iPhone 5.
It's fucking retarded.
Is ridiculous. Okay?
It's ridiculous.
That
was the one thing that I mentioned to you. I downloaded the Google. You know what? At first I wasn't going to download it. Then I downloaded it and I used it for a little bit. And I said, really? Are you fucking guys kidding me?
Look, I mean, the reality is, look, the Apple one has some problems, but it's not all that fucking bad. And the problem is data, and there are certain places where it's wrong, and I get that. You know, most places are just fine. And data problems are easily fixed. Well, not easily, but they'll be fixed over time. But most places, like I've gone back and forth and back and forth with Apple Maps. I did it for a week. It was my exclusive navigation system. It was fine. And the Google Maps is okay, but it's not spectacular.
No, it's not and by frankly, any stretch.
Either one of these from my, I've only been rotating between the eight for like since Thursday, and it's Tuesday now. Any of these eight, both Waze on the free side or Garmin on the paid side are better than either Google or Apple. So,
well, I will say this week I ordered new maps for my car. Okay. Which come in a DVD in order to load them.
Yeah.
This time they came from TomTom. Yeah, they used to be coming from Navtech, which I found curious that Apple's using that TomTom. But by the way, I don't know if you've seen the rumor that, you know, I don't know, Apple may be buying TomTom, I mean, right. I don't know. I honestly don't know why they haven't done it already anyway. Yeah. It's a fucking, like, what? I don't think it's worth $1 billion. Fucking drop in the bucket. Just fucking buy the fucking thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there just might be
grab the fucking maps.
Yeah, there might be better. I don't know. There are a whole bunch of these, and whatever.
Or buy Garmin, buy whichever. I don't know. Fuck, it's cheap.
If you have to buy one, buy Garmin. They're better than TomTom.
Well, yeah, whatever. Just buy one. My point is like it wasn't like I was like tooting TomTom's horn.
Garmin gets their data from other places too. In fact, I think they might even own Navtech at this point. I don't know. But anyway, buy something. This is a show.
Yeah, it's a show. It's a show. I'm looking at the time.
We'll talk about more stuff. Yvonne's going to go to bed. I'm going to go find my family and do something. yawn.
Yes.
Hopefully we won't have, you know, another major shooting to talk about next week.
I really hope not. Yeah.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Questions, comments, thoughts. You can also contact me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, you know, all of them. And we ask you, please, you know, share us, share our show. Anyway, that's it. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Good night.